Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to a September 5, 2008 segment from the Kentucky Water Fuel Museum. With us today is a gentleman who goes by the name Spody Odie. And Spody, are you with us?
Yeah.
Okay, well, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you.
And what we're trying to do here is to publicize an event that's coming up next month in Ruskin, Florida. Is that not right?
Yeah. I saw earlier it was Dustin, but no, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, I've changed the spelling on that. I realize now it is Ruskin. And Ruskin is south of Tampa, is that correct?
Yeah, it's a little south, but it's also east of Tampa. It's on the inside of the bay.
Okay. And we're talking the weekend of October 18 and 19. Is that not so?
That's correct.
Very good. Now, we met at the Jarboe's Mill event in June, and you had an oxyhydrogen cell and a generator set up there in one of the drying kilns, didn't you?
Yes.
Very good. And so this event that's coming up is being called the Part 2 of Jarboe's Mill Alternative Energy Device Show and Tell, right?
Yeah.
So it's a continuation of what took place at Larry Jarboe's place in Charlotte Hall, Maryland, which was what? How would you describe it?
Unique and fabulous, actually. I mean, everybody that was there was just very impressive to what everybody's starting to work on as far as the alternative energy devices and everything. And everybody just came with open arms. And I mean, the people that we met there was just, you know, couldn't have been a nicer group of people. And there's a lot of things that I see coming out of that.
Yeah, so what was nice about the Jarboe's Mill event is that you had a bunch of people from around the country and even out of the country coming together to share information and actual devices, things that they'd built themselves, and they were freely sharing this information, which is a little bit different than some of the other alternative energy conferences that have been held over the years. There has also been a spirit of sharing at some of those events, and of course I haven't been to many of them, but there was also, I think in the past, a lot of people who had products that they wanted to sell and that they wanted the rights to and so on. And the Jarboe's Mill event was more about saying, here's what can be done. If you want to buy one of these from me, I can make you one, but if you want to make one yourself, you can go ahead and do that too, and here's how.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, kind of like a just an open day for all the tinkers and guys and gals who like to just work on their own without somebody else telling them, no, you know, that absolutely doesn't work, but I have another idea that might be able to work, and let's just give it a try. And then they come up with some really fabulous ideas that, hey, I never even thought of that. I could have had this all along, and yet you know, nobody's been able to explain to me or even give me an idea to head me in the right direction. I've had no place to go. And now these events like this, all the brainstorming that just goes on, I mean, you can take all the technologies and overlap them and get, you know, one gentleman has a great idea on this and one has a great idea on that. And the next thing you know, you have a third product that comes out of the thing that neither one had thought of before. And it's just a just great minds just opening themselves up and not closing the gates to, you know, all the new technology that can happen on its own.
Yeah, and this kind of sharing has taken place at festivals. Like, for instance, last weekend I went up to Portland, Indiana, where they had the what they call the world's largest antique engine and tractor show.
Oh, like and, the old steam engines?
Yes, the putt-putt engines.
Yeah, the old hit and miss and all that.
Yes, exactly. And it really is an awesome event. If you can make it, or if anyone listening to this program can make it to that show, it's actually held twice a year, once in the spring and once in the late summer. It is definitely worthwhile going. Of course, there are such shows all over the country and even in other countries. You may be surprised that there are groups all over the world that are interested in the old engines, and they have regular shows or even museums where you can go and see these engines actually running.
Yeah. Fortunately for me, I grew up with most of those things. So when I go to the county fairs or I go to these events like that where they have the steam engines, I mean, I grew up on a farm and, you know, we were plowing with mules to begin with. And then, you know, the steam engines would run by from some of the other farmers. And then, you know, just all the old hit and misses, running, you know, pumps and, you know, starting tractors off on gasoline and then switching more.
Wow, and you don't sound that old.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm 14 working on 12, you know. only young at heart.
And so what is your background, though, with regard to making hydrogen from water? When did you first get interested in that?
To the hydrogen part, I got interested in a friend of mine who is the actual host, Tim Lysey, is the host of this event coming up. Had inadvertently taped a show on the Science Channel about a gentleman in Connecticut who had a house that was completely off the grid, and he did it with solar cells and a hydrogen PEM cell, proton exchange membrane. And after watching that show, you know, I'd taken landscape staples or sod staples and stuck them in a bottle of water and hooked them to a battery, and about 3 hours later there was a bubble there, and I was hooked and just started just studying just head and foot into everything. And then, you know, and it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger in the process until, you know, now it's where we were at the show at Larry's, you know, to see all of the things that are there. And then it's still continuing.
Uh-huh. Very good. So the logical thing to do was to schedule another event because we just didn't get enough at Jarboe's Mill.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, after, you know, before the end of the first day up there, you know, with, you know, Sid Young being there and Larry and yourself and you know, Dustin from SMAC and all that, it just all the people that were there and showing them the technology that they've got, that they've developed in that. And the amount of people that came through with just the overwhelming questions. I mean, day one, I had only enough time to put like 4 bolts back onto the equipment that I was demonstrating, because every time I looked up, I've got 20 to 30 people that I'm giving conversation with or explanation to. And the country is eager to hear anything that does work or will work or even have a concept of possibly working, you know. So the chance of putting a second show together, especially like in the fall for up north, everybody to get a break, come down to Florida, get warmed up. You know, we have, you know, plenty of heat down here.
Yeah, really.
And we have plenty of water. And where I'm at here in the St. Petersburg, Tampa Bay area is kind of like a mecca for a lot of the hydrogen people down here. I mean, a lot of the technologies come right from this area. I mean,
yeah, that's
from the
true
advances, you know, that's come out of here.
That's very true. In fact, I was even going to suggest, if you haven't already, to invite Ruggero Santilli to participate in this event.
I haven't even come across that name as of yet in all of the heroes that I've heard of.
Yeah, he's the founder of the MagnaGas technology.
Oh, okay.
MagnaGas, MagnaGas.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you can do a search on his product. He makes a device there in Florida. He's capable of running vehicles on it, capable of powering factories and so on with it.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, we also have down here, I haven't been able to talk to him yet, but another friend that was at the show there, the third person I actually met at Larry's show, Dan Hogg down here, he knows Denny Klein, and Denny Klein has the hydroxy torch that he has.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great to get Denny Klein involved?
Oh, yeah. Him and everybody else.
Yeah, but I don't think he's ever been at an event like this with his device, you know, and just talking and meeting people, so people get to know him.
Well, I think it was just last week, he had come back on the local news that we have down here again, because he shows up every now and then on there with his thing. And about every couple of weeks, we see somebody that says, I've invented this, and here, this is what I'm going to do to save the world. And the local news that down right here picks up on it a little bit and, you know, tries and push it along well. So, yeah, having anybody that we're already familiar with in the hydrogen world, you know, having any of them come and give us a talk of any kind would be, you know, greatly appreciated.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Why shouldn't there be cooperation? I know that in the 19th century, the late 18th century and early 19th century in Europe, the scientists, the famous scientists who really made history with their discoveries, were sharing information, like Alessandro Volta. You know, he made the first battery.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he made other major discoveries. These people were traveling around sharing what they were learning. And that's why there was such quick picking up of the technology and running with it. You know, it wasn't a matter of weeks or months after Alessandro Volta made that first battery in 1800 that a couple guys in England did electrolysis with a battery, a copy of it.
Yeah.
So that kind of spirit needs to prevail here too, and it appears to be in this circumstance.
Well, like with the Larry's, and then you know hopefully with this one here. Like you said, that people were sharing because even at this one here, there's nobody saying, okay, well, I mean, people will say, okay, yeah, I've got the copyrights and I have patents pending and everything like that. But, you know, after things get patented, it becomes public knowledge and then somebody just changed the idea. It's like, if we have an open forum and everybody just shares the ideas, I mean, sure, to have an exclusivity to something that you've done is great and wonderful, but if you get 1,000 people or 5,000 or even 10,000 people making, you know, semi-faulty or not even quite adequate equipment, through all the errors, by the open conversation with everybody, somebody's bound to come up with a brilliant idea, and the whole thing will work, and we'll all greatly benefit by it. Some one person may be able to line their pockets indefinitely with it, but it will still get the technology to where the big fuel companies, you know, won't be able to hold on to everything that we've got and control us as individuals, where we can be autonomous on ourselves.
Yeah, and I think that's the motivation for many of us, is that we don't like that kind of control that we've been subjected to, and we would rather share information freely to help other people to all work together to break these shackles than to continue being victimized by this fuel scenario.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, since the conference, it's like just the responses are, you know, I'm a peeker and poker on the computer. I still haven't, in this time of my life, even figured out how to type properly yet, but with the event after that, you know, just keeping up with emails with everybody from the conference, we're still sharing information back and forth with what I thought was the principal players up there, people who are really going to, you know, collaborate enough to get something really just magnificent coming out of this, because there's small little parts that just make the whole just that much better.
Yeah, it's very interesting how insight is shared. Everyone has something that they can do to contribute to the advancement of the technology.
Yeah. You know,
yeah.
The gentleman there that had the Bedini schoolgirl wheel, you know, with the original coil had the copper wire, you know, this one had a silver wire wrapped around it, you know, and he found that made a difference in the overall process. Well, just that one observation within itself, you know, makes that, you know, scalable to go up to a larger infinite power supply, you know, through amplification.
That's very interesting. I didn't even notice that nuance of that device.
Well, I just, what was it, about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, down here, well, I mean, it was all over the country, on the History Channel in Modern Marvels, I'd already been working with this gentleman down here, very young lad, that runs Albright metal polishing down here. And he was talking about electropolishing the stainless. Well, we have the 316L that we're using, and we went through the whole electropolishing process, which removes all the iron oxide off of the surface, brings the chromium to the surface. There's a complete difference in just the performance of the gas production that comes off of it.
Really?
And
how is that done? What does that include, or how is that accomplished?
So, you know, like we're working in what everybody here with the hydroxide generators for the automobiles, everybody's working with like a 12-volt, 15-amp, 12-volt, 20-something-amp, trying to get something that's in that scale. His system is operating at 20 volts, 600 amps, so he's doing, you know, hydrogen on a scale that we'll never try to accomplish on a vehicle, but it's, you know, hydrogen is being produced by the 55-gallon drum load beyond our expectation. Everybody's always wanting to see, well, I need to, like, 3 liters a minute or something like that. Well, this large amperage in the bath salts that he has. His website, he'll explain all of it, and he has a television clip that's on his website that explains everything about
the
process.
What is his website? Would you mind mentioning that?
Yeah, it's Albright. It's all bright.com.
So
ALL-BRIGHT.com. Yep.
Uh-huh.
The gentleman's name is Dustin. He had taken the business over from his dad. Now he's 21 years old. Brilliant individual. I mean, he knows everything in and out about what we're trying to do. I mean, he's very familiar with the dance that we're doing with the electrolysis and the plates and the chemical interactions through the acids or the alkalis and all this, you know. And what happens is that The 316L that we have is now certified at ASTM A967, which is surgical or medical grade stainless, and its passivation doesn't allow for any more contamination. You don't have to continually clean out your reservoir, your bubbler, because the oxides are already removed. Like Bob Boyce had talked about, actively conditioning the plates. Well, I was doing that with vinegar and timing cycles of, removing the iron oxide off the plates. And it does set up a condition that improves, with time. But after doing the electroplating, it's like I don't have the time nor the need to do that anymore because he can have it done in 24 to 48 hours. I just sanded off the edges, the burr edges, just enough so that no one would get cut with the thing from the plates that had been sheared. And then after they're assembled with rubber gloves, I had it on that cell that was in Larry's. I had put the cell together just prior to going to this conference, and I washed my hands, 30, 40 times, working on the cell all day long, and my thumb accidentally just touched a plate for a millisecond, and it went into the cell, and even at the show after 2 days and going to New York for another couple conferences, the thumbprint is still there. And I've got, a very high concentration of potassium hydroxide in the cell, and it still will not dissolve it away. And Dustin here, he was fully aware that that won't change it. You know, just trying to take it off for that. But with the electropolishing, it cleans it up everything.
Huh. And so basically you're paying a shop to subject your plates to very high amperage electrolysis, is that it?
Yeah, 20 volts, 600 amps.
And that's drawing out the iron and some other properties from the surface?
Yeah, all of your stainless comes with a sealant on the surface, and then it runs through a nitric acid bath first to remove any of the oils and things like that. And then it goes into, I believe it's sulfuric acid and a couple other things that's in there. He can explain everything with it. I mean, he's right there. And then it hangs by like a 2-inch copper pipe across the top of this bath where the anode on this thing is a serious piece of pipe. And like I said, we can only dream about seeing that much hydrogen come out of a 20-volt system. But, he's looked through the grid. And this is what, he has done things that are, he's polished equipment that's on the Skylab or the space station. He did a gyroscope for the space station. So they're no joke down here. They really know what they're doing, and it is, and they do all of the flight baskets for the Coast Guard and things like that.
Yeah.
So,
now let me ask you this: what do you attribute the increased gas production to, then, in particular? Is there a definite fix on what it is that's increasing the gas production when you?
Everything that I've done with the cell so far, I always have a cell that's open top that I have immersed, and I have a magnifying glass that never moves. It's a complete observation position from those cells and any of the configurations, a double anode, double cathode, neutrals, however. Through the difference from the electro polishing to what there was prior, the size of the bubbles and the increased surface activity, because before in just pickling it, you'd see, I'd want to say maybe a half millimeter or, a couple microns between bubbles, where here you have a solid surface emitting the microscopically small bubbles on a continuous ease of flow. There's no restriction or no cavitation between the plates, where the cell or the bubble itself is closing off the activity of the water passing through. And the amperage dropped in half, which to explain that from the same electrolyte to me is, one thing that I've noticed already is I can just take it directly from them, assemble it, and put it directly into the distilled water, no electrolyte whatsoever. And I have a hydroxy production at about 3.5 to 4 amps without any electrolyte whatsoever, which prior to doing that, nothing.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, it appears that you may have stumbled on to a phenomenon that is similar to the coatings that General Electric came out with to be put over plastic electrodes. Are you familiar with that, these nanoparticles or something?
Jan Hawk, who was up there at the conference with us, he had just informed me that about 3 weeks ago that I think he had received an email on something like that where there's a polymer or I
think it's called Norel or something.
Yeah, where it increases by tenfold the surface area of the material that it's attached to, the porosity.
Right, and could it be that you're creating that kind of porosity by drawing out the iron and whatnot?
Primarily with drawing out the iron, I know that there's no further contamination to the bottom of the cell.
What I'm saying is, if you have something that's coming out as a precipitate, I guess they call it, it's something that normally takes place over a long period of time of electrolysis in a cell, but you're getting it out quickly through this high-amp treatment that you're doing.
Is
it possible you're creating a porosity in the surface that is mimicking what this General Electric coating is? Because they're claiming that you use plain water also.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a great possibility because, I mean, hence, if the iron is removed, then B, it's not refilled with the stainless that was milled, so then there would be a void there. And like I said, it brings the chromium to the surface, so, you know, there's your...
So you know what I'm sort of thinking of? You know how when you get certain harsh chemicals on your skin, and those harsh chemicals sort of take the oil out of your skin, and the surface of your skin is now very different. It's like dry and porous.
Yeah, or alligator skin right away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And is that possible that that's what we're doing when we, what are you calling, like overdriving these plates, or what would be the word you use? You're sort of
they're putting them
frying
in overdrive.
you're frying the plates, basically, huh?
Well, they're exciting the molecules so much that they're expanding to their outer limits of what their reach is without being, you know, dissolved completely into the bath itself.
Yeah.
You know, because I'd asked about, you know, like having to do like the nuts and the bolts, studs and the washers, things like that. And he can do them, but they have to clip them in one at a time because he said that it has a tendency that if you do just lay things in a basket, arcing, you'd be surprised at how much heavy arcing they have going in. So there's a real high electron flow of energy through the process. So,
very interesting. Well, these are things that we're going to want to find out more about in a month at this October 18-19 show and tell event in Ruskin, Florida.
Yeah, at the Little Harbor Resort, which is just down the road from us here. You know,
now, what is the Little Harbor Resort? Is it a community or is it just a...
Well, to those of us that live down here, we all knew it as Bahia Beach, you know, and then a group of investors come in and they created a resort down there. They've got some high-rise buildings that they're trying to sell and set up for residents, you know, multi-million-dollar residences. But it's the beach. There's a clubhouse there. There's a hotel there. And it's our local access to the bay, really.
Okay.
You know?
And so where will the event actually be held there?
There's a conference hall at the resort right on the beach. I mean, and will be the active displays will be out in the parking lot. The static displays will be inside, you know, people that have paraphernalia of paper, you know, information on the inside. And it all has view of the bay within like a couple hundred feet.
Well, so it sounds like a much more touristy type destination than Larry's sawmill property.
Yeah, well, the thing for me with Larry's was, you know, I'd come up there and I'd got directions from him and Nora about where everything was located. And then I get up there, and none of the locals there seem to know what's going on, but yet the Amish gentleman that's at the flea market in the front there directed me, oh, yeah, it's up there behind the trailer up there. So I'm going up to the sawmill. You know, I'm the first one there day one, about 6 o'clock in the morning watching the sunrise. And I felt like I'd just gone back home because I grew up in Amish country, and it was an Amish man telling me how to get to the show.
Isn't that funny?
And bizarre enough was during the show, the people who had purchased most of Smack's boosters that were there were Amish. You know, I was like, wait, when I grew up, they wouldn't even accept the ride in a car.
Yeah.
And here they're buying the technology that we're working on now.
That's hilarious. Well, it's obvious that they've compromised their standards with regard to internal combustion engines and so on, because, like you say, there was a time when they were sort of against modern technology.
Of any kind. I mean, I grew up with it. My neighbors were all Amish or Hungarian, and they were all farmed in a manual way, you know, and mules.
Well, they've accepted, the reality of the fact that an engine isn't so evil in itself, like money's not evil, you know.
Yeah.
It's the love of money, and maybe it's the love of these engines.
Yeah.
But you can
fall in love with some engines, though.
But perhaps it's good to see the Amish, because they're the ones who are relying on generators and whatnot. They don't want to be connected to the grid in many cases. So they would logically be very interested in some kind of alternative fuel supplement that would reduce the use of gasoline and diesel. And so, hey, great, you know. If the Amish are the ones who are going to run with this technology first so that the rest of society can follow, so be it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah, just let's run from our like, our calm spoken brother. Larry had gone to my dog.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, we've come to the end of our time, but we're going to have to do a follow-up before the show to see what's shaping up, who the invited, who's responded to the invitations to come and speak and present. Perhaps we can, sometime between now and October 18th, have another interview that updates people on what's coming up.
Oh, yeah, yeah, anytime. I mean, I'd love to.
What about a web page that people can go to?
There's a web page. Well, you had actually started it, and we finally got something that put together on everything. It's Energy Show and Tell, and that's, you know, the word written out, A-N-D, at wetpaint.com.
Okay, so WetPaint is a site that allows you to have a free web page. And
yes.
It allows you to post videos and you can chat. So it's a place where anyone interested in this show can actually get involved, questions or comments and video and so on.
Yes, yes. It's a common ground for everybody and anybody that wants to come and prior to the conference, get together, you know, and like I said, discuss ideas on things there. And then we have another site, Hydro Alternation, which is .com is in the process of being built, and that'll explain things as well as far as the conference.
Great.
But the Energy Show and Tell .wetpaint.com is specifically for the show and tell events. And
okay.
There's another one even planned again for in the spring. There's talk of that by another individual. So it
well,
looks
why
like
not?
Movement.
Why shouldn't there be a follow up?
Exactly.
Every couple months.
Yeah, yeah, a whole movement of shows.
Well, and if
know,
it travels but, around the country, it'll be easier for people who can't travel to get to it.
Yeah, yeah, you know, like one in each region or, you know, 20 in each region, they'd
sure.
be great.
Well, if you've got Ringling Brothers traveling around, why shouldn't there be alternative energy traveling around, you know?
Exactly, exactly.
If they can have their circus, we can have ours, too.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Well, listen, thanks for joining us on the program. I hope everyone's... planning on attending this event if they can and benefiting from it and sharing what they know as well.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, there's an invitation on the site, and everybody can get a hold of Dr. Brenda J. Willis at yahoo.com to respond to the show if they have something to show or if they want to share in the show or the event. You know, they're just contact her. It has asked for registration, but that's just so that we know how many people to save a lot of space for at the conference. And that's
yeah,
all.
And I've got her email address also. On the
yes.
show description here on Blog Talk Radio, I have her email address listed.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, and it is free. There is no cost. I mean, it's everybody's welcome. Just come and see what you've got, show what you've got, and let's make a day of it. You know, let's make history.
And there is even discounted lodging available for Friday night or Saturday night or even Sunday night.
Yeah, yeah. They worked it out where the people that did register for developers and inventors or people at the conference, you know, that they will hook us up a group of rooms. So yeah, that's the biggest part of the registration is to give them a heads up.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Well, Spodey, thanks for joining us, and look forward to repeating this in a couple weeks so we can get an update on what's happening.
Great, great. And then we can go into the water hit and miss that you saw at your little show. So.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting. In fact, I picked up a Maytag washing machine with a 2-cylinder engine, so looking forward to doing some experiments with that.
Oh, there you go. All right.
Well, thanks for joining us, and everybody take care.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.